Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have an episode that people always request about, and that is the supplements for neurodiverse kids. What actually helps? Today we have on Brittany Darling. How are you, Brittany?
I'm great. Thanks, Jane.
Now, I just finished telling Brittany that nobody ever listens to the bio that I read out on the website. So I'm just going to flick over to Brittany about a quick one-two about who you are.
I'm Brittany Darling. I'm a Sydney-based mum and also clinical nutritionist. I'm also the founder of Kids Supplements and Nutrients. So I have a son who's neurodiverse, he's on the autism spectrum, and he also has ADHD. And I suspect that I have ADHD, not to self-diagnose myself, but going to get that diagnosis once I can get my GP to do it in New South Wales. I've just been putting it off for so long. So I think that's welcome news that New South Wales GP is going to be able to make that diagnosis soon. And who knows, I may not, but I also very well may be.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think a self-diagnosis is absolutely valid because it is not a limited club. If people believe that they have it, it really doesn't take anything away from anybody else. So I'm all about a self-diagnosis. I think it's really important because some people don't seek medication, and that's okay. So let's dive right in, because a lot of people talk about supplements. A lot of people try natural things before they move to medication, or they move straight to medication, or they never move to medication. And that's absolutely a personal decision. There are a lot of supplements that I feel are pushed online by, we just don't know who these people are a lot of the time. And I do think that ADHD tax, ADHD women, impulsivity, and the desperation to help their kids can make them a really vulnerable target, which does piss me right off. So how do parents even begin to know what is legit and what is just throwing money against a wall?
Yeah. So acknowledging my bias, I literally have a supplement company, but I think the biggest red flag for me is if they're specifically marketing to ADHD or neurodiversity, you are not allowed to do that. In Australia, we have the TGA, or the Therapeutic Goods Administration. ADHD is a restricted representation. You are not allowed to be marketing. So if you're getting Facebook ads or Instagram ads that are saying, oh, this really helped my ADHD brain, not allowed. That should be the first red flag.
The Facebook group is a real problem area for me, because my Facebook group is by far the most proud part of ADHD Mums. It is so positive. I love those women in there. However, we've got scammers beyond scammer, and they're very hard to detect coming in. I do not want to make it hard to get into the group, because the poor ADHD is trying to get in their executive function. They miss a question, they get declined. It's such crap. But I've had to really pull it in, because I have felt that they have come in and sold hard to the audience and taken advantage of people. So I am wondering then, if it is not allowed, are these American companies? How can I report them? Because I'm not happy with that I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so there's a couple of routes. If it's an Australian company, you can report them for an advertising breach to the TGA. But the problem is with, like you said, a lot of these American companies, yes, you can report them to the FDA, but they're not held to the same tight advertising rules that we are here in Australia. And the FDA is really under-resourced compared to the TGA. So yeah, it is really difficult. And yes, it's America. Yes, it's other parts of the world as well. It's unfortunate that they're ending up in your Facebook group. And I wonder whether there's a way of just manually booting them out and blocking them. But I feel like us as consumers and mums just need to be a little bit savvy and recognize that, yeah, if they're saying this is for ADHD or neurodiverse children, that should be your first red flag.
And wouldn't it be amazing if there was a Facebook ad that came and gave you exactly what your child needed? Like, it's too good to be true. And yeah, but it's so tempting to go in there and buy the product. And I've done it. A lot of people have done it. If a parent was to look in an ad, well, one, it would be illegal. I suppose that should be a red flag. And two, the other thing I wanted to briefly ask you was, there are nutritionists do seem to be a little bit like a ADHD coach. Now, there are very qualified, very, very, very good ADHD coaches I've had on the podcast, I've worked with. I think they're great. There are also a 5-hour ADHD coach course that you can do. And there seems to be a very big variance with nutrition, health and lifestyle. Like, what are some good credentials we should be looking at with nutritionists and supplements people that do sell them?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So acknowledging that not everyone's going to be able to afford to see a nutritionist or a naturopath on top of all the other pediatrician and developmental pediatrician appointments that we have to attend. But properly qualified nutritionist or naturopath that specializes in ADHD can be a game changer. They're going to look at your kid's diet. They're going to potentially order some bloods. They're going to really tailor a protocol around your own child's needs. But also, there's a lot of information and a lot of online courses as well that you can do. It's called Super Natural Kids or something like that. We'll link it in the show notes. They do great online courses to help parents navigate all this information on themselves without having to see that clinician. But yeah, qualifications are really important to look into. You need an accredited clinical nutritionist. So anyone can call themselves a nutritionist. So just ask, where do they study? Who's their association? And what are their credentials?
Because I think you've made a great point with the price, but I found that unqualified nutritionists with a very small, basic, barely any course, some of them charge the same as a clinically qualified nutritionist. So you do have to be really careful, because if you were going to pay that money in such an expensive time, you obviously want to see that result and that credential. It's a great point. And people should have them on the website. I think if somebody does not have their credentials on the website, for me, that's a red flag.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing to point out is that we just got private health fund rebates back for nutrition and naturopathy. So even asking that question is going to let you know whether they have the credentials in order to get that private health fund rebate. So that's another way of subtly checking their credentials.
Yeah, because no one wants to be that person to be like, are you properly qualified? Everyone thinks they're properly qualified. So I think those are some great questions. So Medicare rebates, private health refunds, and also the website. If somebody has done the hard work, I always find credentials on websites, always.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on, that's a great start. I have got children with ARFID, and I, of course, wanted to put this question in up front because my husband, he's actually university degree qualified nutritionist and he's a personal trainer. So he's always talking to me about supplements and things that our kids need that they're probably missing because it's difficult to get them to eat different foods. However, we've got this battle where we can't get them to take an extra tablet. They won't drink a flavored drink. And I'm like, that sounds really good, hubby, but I can't physically get those things in that you've just bought from the health food shop. Have you got any tricks around getting the supplements in?
Yeah, so I guess it depends on the individual child, right? Like I find some kids are fine taking chewable tablets. Some kids are fine with gummies. Other kids are fine with drinks. And then, you know, everything in between. It's just such a vicious cycle, right? I find that iron deficiency and low zinc do play a huge role in terms of appetite regulation and sensory sensitivities. So you've almost just got to somehow break that cycle, whether it's oral supplements. I do clinically sometimes use transdermal creams as well in very restricted situations just to do something, just to try and break that cycle. And then maybe we go back to oral supplements because you will get a much higher dose from oral supplement. Maybe we go back to that in 2 months' time once we've done the transdermal creams. But yeah, it's really tricky. And I think how I think of it with these kids is, what's the one thing that's going to move the needle the most? What's the lowest hanging fruit? What's the easiest thing to implement? And again, it's going to depend on, you know, the kids, whether you have any obvious deficiencies like iron that you need to treat ASAP, because we know picky eaters, low in iron. If they're not eating a ton of meat, they're going to be low in iron. Kids are growing, they need so much iron. ADHD kids, if they haven't been assessed for iron deficiency anemia, they should be. It's absolute negligence if they haven't had their iron level tested and they've ended up with an ADHD diagnosis, because the two can look very similar.
Well, that is a really interesting point, because I haven't heard of many pediatricians that do bloods before ADHD medication, to be honest. But maybe that's just my experience. I've actually spoken to a lot of ADHD parents. I haven't heard a lot of pediatricians doing that, actually.
Yeah, I'm lucky. My son's pediatrician is quite holistic. He was the first one to flag, okay, right, we need to be testing iron first. And as a nutritionist, I was like, music to my ears. I don't have to have this battle with you. But yeah, I agree. I see so many people come through my clinic that literally haven't had their iron levels tested, even kids with anxiety. It may not be anxiety. It could be iron deficiency anemia. So always test iron first.
Okay. And I spoke to a GP recently at a dinner. And of course, I ended up talking to him about ADHD instead of enjoying Saturday night dinner with my husband. But anyway, he was talking about how you can combine tablets into one tablet at a compounding chemist. Is that a thing that can happen easily, or how does that work? Because I didn't know that.
Yeah, look, you can get supplements compounded. The tricky thing is the amount, right? Like you're only going to, if you think about a chewable tablet or a capsule, you're only going to fit so much into that chewable tablet or that capsule. And it's expensive. That's the other thing. So yes, it is an option. You can also compound powders. Powders tend to be cheaper to compound. You're going to have to get it prescribed. Dosages are really important. So you want to be working with a healthcare professional who really knows what they're doing in terms of nutritional compounding.
It's tricky, isn't it? So let's say if compounding chemists weren't a valid option, I've done that a couple of times. You're right, it is expensive and it is an expensive time that we're living in. So let's say, for example, if your son or your daughter is taking one tablet, that's their medication that they're taking. And let's say you think, I could probably get one more tablet in, but I reckon I'm going to be capped on two tablets max. Mm-hmm. If you could only get in one supplement or two, what would be the two that you'd start with?
The number one thing that I would say if they were on meds would be something, a good dose of magnesium in it, especially a magnesium glycinate. So magnesium is going to help to offset some of those stimulant medication side effects, especially some of the cardiovascular ones, like the elevated blood pressure, which we worry about. It also helps to reduce stress and the catecholamines, and it's regulating to the nervous system. So if there was one nutrient, it would probably be magnesium. The other thing is that there's some quite good evidence around saffron when taken concurrently with stimulant medication. They both work similarly in terms of efficacy. So instead of having to take, say, a 20 milligram dose, your child might be able to get by with some saffron and that 10 milligram dose. But of course, it's going to be so individual, and every medication works differently for every child. And so it's also going to be the same for combining supplements and medications.
That is a great point, because I speak to a lot of ADHDers about themselves and with children, and a lot of the time they follow the medical advice completely and down to the letter, which I fully understand and respect. However, if your child or you also are getting a result at a lower dose and the advice is to titrate up to this in 2 weeks' time, you can always choose to stay on the lower dose. So sometimes I feel like there's this road up to titrate up, when actually if you're getting the result you're looking for at a lower dose, you can always move to that later. What do you think about that? Because my goal is always to go on the lowest dose possible for as long as I can until I need to go up.
Yeah, look, it's tricky for me as a nutritionist. That's so outside of my scope. But I do think that being on a lower dose of a medication and having efficacy is obviously more desirable. You're also not going to have all those other side effects that you get potentially with higher dose medication. So as well as nutrient depletion as well. So I'm kind of talking from personal experience on that one.
Oh, completely. And look, I agree. That's a personal, and obviously follow the advice of your medical professional, but maybe ask that question in the appointment. Like,
yeah,
do I have to titrate up if I get the result on the lower dose? I feel like sometimes the medical professional tries to do the right thing by somebody by letting them know what would come next in a helpful way. However, I would always ask the question, if you get that result earlier, what happens then? A follow-up question for you, Brittany, because I love your answer to the stimulant medication question with like what supplement would work in with that, which the answer was magnesium if you had to only pick one. If you had an unmedicated child that you were waiting to get diagnosed, a medication wasn't working, they weren't old enough, whatever it is, what would be the supplement that you would think should be addressed first if you were in that position?
So the very first thing should be those bloods, especially getting iron levels tested for sure. That would be the number one thing. And then if you were like, okay, this is ADHD, I would be looking at a saffron supplement. There are studies that show that similar effects to stimulant medication. It's a culinary spice. It's really safe. It's suitable for kids 6+. So maybe not for that younger kid who's been diagnosed with ADHD, but certainly for a younger child, you could be doing it through food. But yeah, saffron would absolutely be my go-to. It's such a hero herb. And literally just Google Scholar saffron and you'll find some really good quality evidence around saffron.
Now, I'm going to jump to what I think some people will be doing on this podcast. I feel like they would have almost paused what you said, or you're probably still talking, and then they are going over onto Google Chrome and looking at saffron and looking at magnesium. Now, for those people, I see you, and that's exactly what I would do. However, Brittany, what kind of website should we be on? Because I would imagine there's different quality and there's going to be some other companies that may not be giving you the same amount, the same quality. what would be some companies or some things to look for in the companies before you buy the supplements?
So first of all, Australian supplements with an AUSTL, so AUSTL number on the front, is generally a really good place to start. As I said, the TGA is really diligent in Australia. Australian supplements have to be tested for the content. Second of all, they have to be tested for microbes, mold, heavy metals within really tight reference ranges. So Australian supplements are definitely more premium. And then also the quality of the ingredients. So with saffron, what you want is the clinically researched form Afron. That's the form, so it's basically saffron without the S, so Afron. That's what a lot of the clinical studies have been done on. And by having a trademarked clinically studied form of saffron or any nutrient for that matter, you know that it's been through diligent, thorough testing. It has the clinical studies and what you're getting is a really premium product.
I love your clear, straightforward answers. It's very good for my autistic brain. I'm like, great, excellent, an answer. I love it. Okay. Moving forward, I think we've all heard about gut health and how that affects the brain. Is there solid evidence that gut inflammation or microbiome issues affect ADHD symptoms, or is that just something we see online to make us buy the product?
Look, I definitely think the correct term is emerging evidence. I think back to like 15, 20 years ago, we literally thought that what happened in the gut stayed in the gut. And obviously where we are now, there's a lot more information. We know that basically the gut isn't just a long tube that goes from our mouth to our bottom, that there are certain things that are made in our gut. There are neurotransmitters like serotonin. There's all sorts of inflammatory markers as well that can be present in the gut that can contribute to neuroinflammation as well. So I think the research is emerging. There's definitely certain characteristics of certain types of gut microbiomes that are linked with people with ADHD. But the important thing to consider is you inherit your genetics. For our family, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But the other thing that you inherit is your gut microbiome. And you inherit that from your mother through being in utero, through vaginal birth, through skin contact with all relatives, with the microbiome of your household. So there could be a link there as well. And then the other thing that I always consider is it an ADHD microbiome or is the ADHD creating that type of microbiome? So clinically, I see ADHDers have certain dietary preferences, certain lifestyle choices, all of those kinds of things. And is that what's contributing to that microbiome type and potentially some of those gut problems? Or is it that the ADHD is giving them that type of microbiome? It's just such a unknown emerging area and there's so many moving parts. I don't think we'll ever know the full story, but yeah, it's certainly something to look into. I know like microbiome and gut health is such a big one. What I urge people to focus on, especially with their children, what are their gut symptoms? If they're constipated, help them with their constipation. Things like kiwi fruits or PHGG are fantastic. Even magnesium actually is also awesome for constipation. If it's tummy pain, focus on that. Carminative herbs like chamomile or lemon balm can be great for that as well. Digestive enzymes can be awesome too. So focus on what the gut problem is and treat that rather than going after the perfect gut microbiome, which we know is basically going to be achieved by eating 30 different plant foods.
Okay, so moving forward, so if there are families that are using medication, how does supplement fit in around that? So I know that you talked about magnesium before. What about if we flip it about or we talk specifically about side effects? Are there any supplements that will help with the side effects that we see with ADHD medication?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, sleep is probably one of the biggest ones that I see. So again, magnesium, great for sleep. Iron levels are really important for sleep as well. You actually need iron to make your melatonin. You also need vitamin B6 and zinc to make your melatonin. So think about what potential deficiencies could be there. Saffron is also fantastic for sleep as well. I know I'm so biased on the saffron, but just like acknowledging my massive bias, but it is honestly like has been such a game changer for us. In terms of other side effects, yes, a lot of these kids aren't hungry at lunchtime. So I often worry about what nutrients are they missing out on. If he's really only eating breakfast and dinner and not much in between, what can I give him at lunchtime, say, that's going to be helping him meet his protein requirements and also his calcium requirements. It's like, what is that one thing I can put in his lunchbox that's going to be appealing enough that he's going to have a nibble on it to help him meet his macronutrient requirements as well? And I think that not having lunch and not having adequate protein throughout the day does contribute to that sort of meltdown after school. And also, what can you kind of pass over the back seat at pickup as well to just get something in the belly? It could be a collagen protein bar. He likes them. They're chocolate. They're probably not like the best, but there's some really, really good ones available now with pretty clean ingredients.
Oh, well, I actually think that's a pretty good result, because from a clinical nutritionist point of view, I was expecting you to say you hand over some boiled broccoli and then he eats that with like a boiled egg and then, you know, some healthy good fats. And I was like thinking that my child would never eat that. But a collagen chocolate protein bar, that would be on the cards if I tried a few different types. It's actually a really great tip.
Yeah. Yeah. And even I find those beef sticks, the gooey beef stick, my kids love those as well, or beef jerky, and also so easy. I am like so disorganized. So if it's not literally in my car center console, I forget to take them a snack every time. And you think I would learn my lesson, but I always forget. But so anything shelf stable in that compartment in the car is a huge win for everyone.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you specifically what, but then I expected you to say broccoli and eggs and good fats and all of this stuff I had to pre-prepare, right? And so I was actually thinking to myself, all I could really do is muesli bars. I love the fact that you can actually recognize that, because the executive function required on refrigerating those products, having them there at pickup in already one of the busiest times in a mum's day is almost impossible. But I don't think you can really heat them up too much. They probably have to be refrigerated. But I think those are all things that I could imagine a child would eat, because my kids possibly have a go at it and they are absolutely like the fussiest kids alive, I reckon.
Yeah, I think mine might beat you to that, but I'm not being competitive.
Oh, I'm relieved about that, because I always, whenever I talk to nutritionists, I always imagine them eating the most perfect diet, and I just feel like intimidated even asking what those children would eat, because mine are very difficult and there are those kids out there that are so hard to feed.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay, so moving forward, I have noticed a lot of fear messaging, and that comes a lot with some of those supplement American companies that will bring up those titles that will really get ADHD mums emotional, like meds deplete nutrients, for example. And I was just wondering if that is true, and if that is true, what could we do about that?
Yeah, I mean, let's acknowledge that fear-mongering is like the greatest marketing. So there's that red flag, right? But yeah, so pharmaceuticals do cause nutrient depletions, whether we're talking about stimulant medications, whether we're talking about metformin, which is used for diabetic. Basically, all pharmaceuticals will have some level of nutrient depletions. So I wouldn't be scared. I would just be informed and aware. And you can ask your doctor, and oftentimes on the pamphlet as well, it may list certain nutrients that you need to look out for in terms of depletions. The common ones with stimulants is things like magnesium, B vitamins and vitamin C. And then also consider the effect of suppressed appetite and what they might be missing out on when they're not hungry as well. And just plan for a really nutritious breakfast if possible. And then also stacking in that as many nutrients in that dinner as well. And even if you're just focusing on the protein, kids usually love carbs. So that kind of just comes as part of it. And then whatever form of vegetable or colourful thing you can include, that's good. But yeah, don't be scared about nutrient depletions. They're kind of like, it is what it is. If you're on meds, it's a necessary evil and you just deal with it. Add in some supplements if you need to, or focus on the food that are high in those nutrients. But like magnesium, for example, it's like leafy greens, nuts and seeds and whole grains. Kid is eating those. I mean, I don't think they're listening to that podcast, so we can say it like that.
It's almost impossible, really. So I love the fact that you actually have a fussy eater child yourself. A lot of people, I feel like, talk about things as if it's easy, or what they think is easy is like the best case scenario, almost impossible for someone else. So I think probably having that really grounded approach, I really appreciate that. So what is your take on some of those calming blends, the magnesium gummies, all of those big promises that we're going to chill your kid out, this is the answer, those really hardcore benefits that we see? Is it clever marketing, or is there any benefit at all to any of those?
So a lot of these products are formulated for adults. They've obviously found that there's a segment of the market that's very fruitful for them, marketing to ADHD mums for themselves, but also for their children. So when it comes to safety of a lot of these ingredients, there's no safety data for things like L-theanine, which is in a lot of these preparations. There was actually just a big court case in America about the therapeutic claims they were making around L-theanine and also marketing it for use in children when the evidence for safety does not exist. They also questioned some of the efficacy around the claims that they were making as well. Other things that aren't safe for kids, passion flower, not suitable for children. Ashwagandha or withania. There is some recent studies on ashwagandha, which we're actually looking at, but they haven't been peer reviewed yet. So TBC on things like that. So I think safety and also dosaging that's suitable for children is really important. So dosing of magnesium, particularly dosing of zinc and also vitamin B6. If you have too much, it's not a good thing. So if you're giving your kid a supplement that is made for adults, it may not be suitable. The other thing is, where is it being made? Again, looking for that Austell number. That means that it's listed on the ARTG for the Australian Register of Therapeutic Goods with the TGA. Is it being tested for heavy metals? You know, I'm not saying anyone's adding lead to their supplements, but when sourcing natural ingredients, there is a possibility that there is going to be some heavy metals. And unless you're testing for it, you won't know that it's there. There could be potentially lead or mercury as well, which we're going to see an exacerbation of symptoms in our kids. A lot of these heavy metals are neurotoxic. So yeah, you got to know where you're getting your supplements from. I know it's really hard to skip through the sea of things. The only other thing to acknowledge is with gummies, because we've looked into doing a lot of our formulations as gummies, not all formulations work as gummies if you want the therapeutic dose. Child dosing, therapeutic dosing, it's a juggling act. And gummies usually don't cut it, and they're usually full of sugar. There are very few gummies on the market that don't just contain sugar.
I love your answer. Just let me clarify something, and I might be the only person that doesn't follow it, or it just needs clarification, because I think what you see is so great. I want to check I've got it right. Let's just say if I went, I'm going to go get some magnesium for one of my kids, and I think that they might eat a gummy. They wouldn't, but let's just say that they might. And I went on the website and I saw in a company, and I didn't realize it was American, let's say, and it comes in and it says on the packet, give your child two gummies, one in the morning, one at night. Let's just say, are you saying that company may not have been TGA approved? And so that dosage that you're reading available for kids under 12, have two gummies, that has not been tested, may contain the other things that you spoke about, which may not be good. What was the sticker that you said?
Oh, Austell, A-U-S-T-L.
Austell. So if it has that on there, you know that would be safe. If it does not have that on there, that means that they either haven't gone under testing or haven't passed or don't want to go under testing for whatever reason.
So if it doesn't have the Austell number, it means that it's not registered under the Australian Register of Therapeutic Goods. So that's a sign that it's an Australian supplement company. Australia has the most rigorous requirements for supplements worldwide. Like, that's why our supplements sell so well in other parts of the world, because the rest of the world knows just how good Australian supplements are. They're rigorously tested. We have to validate our claims. We have to have in the supplement what the label says it contains. So yeah, there's that. Supplements made in other countries where they don't have government bodies like the TGA, or they have things like the FDA, which aren't as strict. They don't need to be tested for heavy metals. They don't need to be validated for content claims. I mean, so we just launched in the US in March, right? We could have literally manufactured our supplements in the back of a garage or a warehouse. We could have bottled them up and made them look pretty, and we could have sold them online. We obviously didn't do that. We made them here in Australia in an FDA, TGA approved facility. We air freighted them across. We're doing all the things that we do in Australia. But there are so many cowboys out there. And then the other thing is to look for, especially if a supplement company is doing well, is fake. You want to be cautious of fake as well.
Okay, what about if I just got in the car and drove down to Belize and I went and got some magnesium and some zinc there? Is that any different? Because I haven't seen that little tag on any of the stuff there.
Now that I've said look for it, you'll see it. Anything that's sold in Australia needs to have that Austell.
Oh, okay.
But then e-commerce is excluded in that. So if you're buying something online and it's coming in from overseas, it's not going to have that. Yeah. But on that, if you just go into Woolies, we cannot even make our supplement for the price that a lot of the kids' gummies are being sold for. We can't even make our product for that. That's not even without like bottling it and freighting it and all of that kind of stuff. So if you are selling a product for $10, you got a question, does it actually have therapeutic dosages? What kind of ingredients are being used? I find, especially, and I'll use iron as an example, using iron oxide, which is constipating, it's not particularly bioavailable. It's just cheap, nasty ingredients. It's usually packed in a gummy form with very little active ingredient, filled full of sugar and artificial sweeteners, and then, yeah, sold for $10 because they can obviously make margin on that. Whereas we use iron bisglycinate because ultimately these are the supplements I'm making for my own kids. And now I feel like I'm giving people the hard sell. But like the whole thing started when I learned this for myself, when I looked into giving my son supplements to help him back in 2020. And I was like, oh my God, this is the minefield.
The reason I asked was because when I had one of my children, I can't even remember which one, I was really unwell and I had this huge hemoglobin issue and I had to have all this iron. And my hubby, who we didn't realize any of us had ADHD at the time, I think they might have given me some supplements or something, and he went and got some. And as I said, he is a university qualified nutritionist, and he went and got me some and they tasted awful. And I don't know, remember what my problem was with it. And then I went and ended up just going to Woolworths and being like, well, I can just take these two tablets. And that's what I'm going to do. And I was like, oh, like, don't give me your thing that you say. I said, I didn't like him lording over me. It felt like telling me what to do. And then he picked up the thing that I got from Woolworths or Coles. And he said to me, you would have to have 50 of these or whatever it was to make one of those that I've gone and got you. Yes, I spent $100, but you've bought them for 10. They're a waste of time. And they don't even provide nearly the amount that you need. And taking two is a waste of time. And we had this huge argument. That's why I brought it up, because I wonder if you have the same advice around that, because he has banned me from buying supplements from the supermarket because he said they're a waste of time and money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, if they're selling it for $10, there's obviously not much in there. We can't even make our supplements for $10.
Yeah. And look, if you want to check this out for yourself, one thing that he talked to me about was actually looking up how much of the magnesium is in there and how much of magnesium is in one of the other products that is more expensive. So sometimes we can actually spend $80, $100 on something that is not necessarily really going to help us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same with a lot of these food products that I see popping up in my ad for ADHD as well. There's a lot of powder. They're not therapeutic dosages. Like, they might have all the ideal things that you're looking at, but they're not listing the amount. And the reality is they're food products. They're not therapeutic goods.
Okay, so finishing up, last question for you, Brittany. What advice would you give mums who are doing their best? So they're throwing time and money at the supplements, but they're not really seeing that change. What do you think that you would say to those people?
Take a break. I call it a supplement holiday for 6 weeks to reset. Get back to equilibrium. Get to know who your child is without all the supplements. And probably without all the battles as well. Get updated bloods if you can. I know bloods are such a battle for a lot of kids, but if you can. The other thing that I do clinically is a oat test, but it's something if your kid won't do a blood test. And then introduce supplements back in one by one. So then you know what's working, right? The other reason I find supplements stop working is that maybe you've been doing the same supplements for 4 years. They've been working great. And then you get a wall and you're like, I don't think this is working anymore. Consider that their age has changed and their weight has changed. Therefore, they may need more and their nutritional requirements may have changed.
Great advice. I really love this interview. I thought it was really relatable and really practical. And there's some really important myths around there, around supplements that we've also tackled. If somebody wanted to find out more about you, I will obviously put it in the show notes. No one needs to go grab a pen, but whereabouts are you and what's the best way to work with you?
Yeah, so you can find me at Whole Food Healing on Instagram and you'll find all the links for all the things in my bio there.
Follow Brittany on Instagram. That's where I connected with her and I had quite a few ADHD mums that suggested Brittany as a possible interview guest. And well done to them. I thought that was great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Quick announcement.
Did you know that we have an ADHD mum's shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.